Anurundhata, who is imitating, These describe other pastimes of Krishna, the Supreme Personality, who appeared on this planet Earth, imitating a human child, and performing wonderful activities like killing the Putana. Purport. Maharaj Parikshit requested Sukadeva Goswami to narrate other childhood pastimes exhibited by Krishna of playing as a human child. The Supreme Personality of Godhead incarnates at different times in different planets and universes, and according to the nature of those places, he exhibits his unlimited potency. That a child sitting on the lap of his mother is able to kill a gigantic Putana is extremely wonderful for the inhabitants of this planet. But on other planets, the inhabitants are more advanced, and therefore the pastimes the Lord performs there are still more wonderful. Krishna's appearance on this planet like a human being makes us more fortunate than the demigods in the higher planets. And therefore, Maharaj Parikshit was very much interested in hearing about him. So for Krishna consciousness, then this attitude is very essential, that of the desire to know. If there's no desire to understand, then progress will not be very quick. Because the whole idea is one is trying to catch the mind. The mind is the real thing that one is trying to get at. Many times we think it's so many other things. Krishna consciousness may mean so many things. You know, following the principles or chanting or this or that. But actually the real thing is you're trying to catch the mind. And catching the mind, then you're trying to turn it from its attachment to the material world and connect it to Krishna. That's the actual point. If that's done, Krishna consciousness is complete. Krishna consciousness means that one's attraction and attachment to the Lord are complete. They're full. That makes one Krishna conscious. That's prema. So that's what one is trying to do in this material world, is bring one to that platform. So all these other things are simply various methods to catch the mind. The mind is absorbed in attachments to the body, so we engage the body in Krishna consciousness. The mind's attached to so many emotions and all that. Then we also then take those things, connect them to Krishna, use them in Krishna's service. The mind is attached to, you know, intellectual dealings, intellectual studies or discussions. So then you take those things and connect them to Krishna. So whatever the mind is interested in, then it's connected to Krishna. So then gradually the mind starts to get a taste for Krishna conscious activities. Then with time, then the mind starts to recognize it's not the activities that are wonderful, it's Krishna that's wonderful. Then the attention turns to Him. Because the activities are wonderful, but then it's our taste, our desire. But then it comes to the point of it's Krishna, and then it's pleasing Him becomes the actual impetus. So we see that the whole process of Krishna consciousness is trying to bring one to the point where one's attachment is for Krishna, and one's desires are also for Krishna. You have these two, then your activities are automatically going to be for Krishna. The mind is thinks, it feels, and it wills. These are what it does. So thinking, it will contemplate something and try to see if there's something there to become attached to. Right? The mind needs to be attached. That's its business. So then it must be attached to or repulsed from. There should be a balance here. So then it must attach itself to something. So the mind is always looking at what it can get attached to. That's all it does all day. Something comes up, something to eat. Okay, then you think about it. Is that something I want to eat? You know? Then, if one is very hungry, it's something that you like, then it decides yes, and then it moves to attachment. I have to eat that. And as soon as it gets to attachment, then you make the endeavor to eat. And now, if something comes up, and it's either a preparation we don't like, or we're full, or it's a fast day, or some reason you can't make that connection, then the thinking stops there. That's the whole idea. So now this brings up, this was a side point, then an interesting discussion is what is natural. Right? Because for the mind, it just accepts and rejects. That's all it does. It doesn't do something more than that. So now, one can say, it was very natural someone does this. It's natural kids yell and scream and throw tantrums and pull things off and throw things around the room and, you know, and get angry and yell and scream and make everyone's life miserable. Yes, you could say it's natural means the mind is attached to something. And if there are no directions, then whatever it takes to get that attachment, yes, that's natural. But that's not human life. Human life begins that, okay, I have attachments, but human beings have a method how they attain those attachments. Right? Is it natural for a child to, how do you say, eat in a sophisticated way? No. There's not one small child that doesn't have to be taught how to eat properly. And they smear it all over themselves, you know, eat, everything goes everywhere, and they're perfectly happy, right? It's a complete experience, eating, right? It's why only the tongue should be involved in the eating process. You know, the skin, the fingers, the head, the stomach, the floor, you know, everything is involved, right? And you talk, you laugh, you take all day, right? It means if you have one little thing to eat, if you can get an hour out of that, then that's all the better, you know. You know, an adult will take it, pop it in the mouth, and in 10 seconds it's gone. No kid has to do one of the god of this, that. Keep it going all day. So, yes, it's natural for them to be an animal. Then, to make them human, makes them endeavor. So then the question comes, making them into a human, is that natural or not? That's a real question we should ask. Because if we're really being natural, if you're real natural, you don't find animals washing themselves after they've gone to the toilet. You know, you don't find them wearing clothes, you don't find them, you know, and so many things you don't find them doing. So then the question comes, well, what actually is natural? So this is a serious discussion. Everyone, no, of course, everybody understands. No, our own perception, we call it natural. But what actually is natural? Right? There must be a standard. Like everybody can say, yes, this is gold, and this is grass, and this is, you know, dirt, and this is a rock. And everyone from other countries will agree. But on social things, you see, everybody doesn't agree. But there must be some standard somewhere, there must be something. Because in general, everyone agrees that stealing's not bad. Even thieves will say stealing's not bad, at least from each other. Maybe from someone else, that's another thing. That's occupation, right? The thief, it's his occupation to steal. But as a culture, then one thief doesn't steal from another. Right? So there's always that culture down there. It always keeps raising its, you know, head. So then, natural then, we see is, well, what is natural for the mind to be doing? What does it get attached to or shouldn't get? So it's like this, if the mind has already accepted the value that I don't eat grains on the codicil, then when some nice Mahaprasad grains come up and are there on the codicil, the mind doesn't want to accept them. And then you could say, well, why you're not accepting, it's natural, you like grains, you're hungry, you want to eat, so it's a natural thing to do. You could say, no, because I have some value. Then it's natural for me to follow that. Because higher than the senses is proper behavior or culture. Right? So therefore, I'm going to follow these religious tenets because that is what I value. So that's natural. Natural for me to make the decision as a devotee to act in a certain way. So that's natural. Just like it's natural for Mother Yashoda in the residence of Vrindavan to only do things that are connected with Krishna, if they have love for Krishna. So then, this then throws the whole concept of natural, it makes it very subjective. Right? Generally people work with the term natural as if it's just obvious it's natural. But it's not obvious. So then, that means there must be something common. Like before we were saying, a rock, people say this is a rock, or say this is water, or this is sky. But if we notice, why is it everybody accepts it? Did any one person from any culture create it? No. It's created by God. Therefore, everyone will say the same thing. So then if you have a standard that's created by God, then it's something that can be accepted by everybody. He's the only person that can make a standard that everybody can accept. Because everything's coming from him, that means there's something common with him, so whatever he establishes, there's a common element to everything. So that's the one thing to see. You know, it's said things are changing. The world's changing, things are changing. But the elements of the world are still made out of what is expanded from Krishna. So they still have a common connection to Krishna. So as things become more and more, as the global village becomes more and more estranged amongst its members. Right? That's an interesting point, right? The global village means everything's coming together by communication. But actually, there's less communication between the individuals. Very interesting point. So then, as that is coming more, and people have more and more different ideas, but still, each individual has their connection back to the Lord. So that means things that are connected with the Lord still apply. People change, but their connection to Krishna doesn't change. You can't change that. Not possible. Because Krishna's created everything. Everything's coming from him. So the one thing that you can count on that will work is something connected to Krishna. Anything else you can't count on. That's the least reliable. So then we see if the mind is accepting things that are connected to Krishna, then when it makes its inquiry on whether I should get attracted to this or not, then it will judge it according to the previous conditions or we have prerequisites or some other thing that's already there. Okay, it must be in connection with Krishna, it must be favorable to Krishna, it must be in line with the Shastras, it must be according of those things in line with the Shastras that the Acharyas have given. You know, then what applies to this practical time, place, and circumstance. All those are put into place, then the mind will look at it, and judging off of those, it will make a decision. Otherwise, what is it going to make a decision on? It's going to use some form of prerequisites. That's good for my senses. Okay, so this is good for my senses, I take it. It may be socially bad, but if being good for the senses is the prerequisite, it'll take it. Right? Some system, the mind works off of systems. Right? How you program the mind, that's how it's going to accept and reject. It's a simple thing. So it's a matter of what we want to accept or what we want to reject. So now we can either become conscious of what we're doing and what we're being put through, right? The modes of nature are going to put us through whatever we go through. That's automatic, right? You perform activities in the past. Those activities create results. And whether you're a devotee or not a devotee, those results are going to come to you, right? It means the devotee goes into a store, buys something for five rupees, puts 10 rupees on the counter, they're going to get 5 rupees back. So it doesn't matter if you're a devotee or not a devotee, you're going to get 5 rupees back. It's the same way as you performed an activity in previous lives in this life, the result is going to come to you. Now, that result, that is what now the mind is going to look at and investigate. Does it want to become attracted to it? And then therefore attached to it, and therefore has to deal with it? Or does it not want to become attracted to it? Or if it is attracted or not, how it's going to do that? If you're going to be attracted to it, how you're going to be attracted? Or if you're going to be detached from it, how you're going to be detached? So then this is something that each individual has to do. They have to program their mind what it's going to accept and what it's going to reject. So the simplest is, what is a connection with Krishna? Otherwise, and then you have such a nice interaction. Right? Braj has millions and millions and millions of devotees, and we all work harmoniously together. Right? But two individuals who don't have the same common background can't work together. So that's the thing. If one can work together, then there's a program in them that allows that. Either they have a common idea, or I have a platform that I work from that I have decided I will work with everybody. You know, I like them, I don't like them. And why? Because it's a good thing. A good person is like this. Okay, so then the point is I want to be a good person. Okay. Okay, now, what is a good person? They look good, they talk good, what is it? Okay, now I decided good means they can cooperate with others. Okay, and then how will I cooperate with others? Means I will have to make some concessions on my side and then see where they're at and try to adjust and make it work. So then if I really want to make it work, I may have to make more concession or less depending upon them. Right? So this is then what the modern people would call a philosophy. Yes, I've got my philosophy about working with people. No, it's a value. Right? So philosophy is your value. So then, if your philosophy is Krishna, then that means you value Krishna, what's in connection with Krishna. Then when something arises, then you just decide, how am I going to deal with this? Do I want to get attracted to this or not? So it's a simple thing. So this is what Krishna consciousness is, slowly, slowly making us aware of our body, our mind, and our words, and what are the values that we give to those. Because we're not going to function outside of that. Right? We consider ourselves mature because we have an identity. Right? And that identity then identifies what I do with my body, what I do with my, you know, emotions, and what I do with my intellect. And that's me. Right? So if you want to change who me is, you simply change what your values are. And it's different. It doesn't mean that you'll look different. It doesn't mean that your intelligence will be different, or your emotions. It just means what you do with them is different. So that's the whole idea. I am servant of Krishna. If I'm servant of Krishna, then I see everything in that light. Or I'm the controller and enjoyer. This actually is as fundamental, basic platforms of existence. You only have these two choices. There isn't a third choice. I am servant of Krishna. Therefore, if I'm servant, that means if I'm really a servant, it has to be in connection with Krishna. Or, I am the controller and enjoyer. In other words, I'm God. It's either Krishna is God or I'm God. There's not a third option. So, He's God, I'm His servant. or I'm God and I ignore him. So that's what we work with. So now if it's something not connected with Krishna, that means that we're God. Right? And that's just the logic of it. That's the bare bones minimum. We can put all kinds of nice euphemisms on it and speak in so many nice ways, but all it is a nicely presented that I am God. You know? Oh, you have to, you know, consider the other person, you have to be this and that. Well, why do you have to consider the other person? Who said? Just because I say everybody should consider someone else and be kind? What is the meaning of that? What is my authority to say everybody should be nice? On what platform, authority, can I speak from on that? Right? Well, everybody says. Well, who's everybody? What's their platform? Where's their authority? Right? So, but in that statement, where does Krishna come in? There is no Krishna in this state. Because otherwise you would say, Krishna Gita says and Bhagavatam says you're supposed to deal properly with the devotees because of their connection with Krishna. They're dear to Krishna. If you want to please Krishna, you know, love me, love my dog. That's Krishna consciousness. But that's transcendental. Right? And, no, be nice to everybody, be kind, be considerate. That's not even the mode of goodness. Right? Because there's no knowledge there. It's passion and ignorance. Ignorance, you don't know that it's all. Passion is you want to be nice. Why? Because you want people to be nice to you. So what we see is that Krishna consciousness means to analyze your position, become conscious of your position, why we do what we do, why we're motivated to do what we do, why we have the desires we have. And then, if they're good, keep them. If they're not, they need to be adjusted. And adjusting a desire, well, I mean, how is it possible? It's a gradual process, this, that. Yeah, the guy goes out to the ski resort, just spent thousands of dollars on that, is really happy with the whole thing, goes out there and breaks his leg. And then he just gets rid of all the ski stuff and decides to do something else. As a karmi, guaranteed, each and every person in the room here has changed their desires in a moment on so many platforms. Someone you liked, said something, did something, you don't like them. Some food, you liked it, something was wrong with it, you don't like it. You know, something there was great, you really like the way the dress is, and you think you look good, and somebody else makes some comment, and that's it, you won't touch that cloth again. So every day of our life, even today as devotees, we're making these decisions to accept and reject these things. And based on that quick of a change, because that's all it takes the mind to change. That's it. It only takes a fraction of a second. Because that's all it is, you have to go from yes, no. Right? Computers work on this, that's why they're so fast. Right? It's one or zero. And it switches back and forth. It's quick, very efficient, so that's all the mind does. So this whole idea of very, no, slow, that means we're attached to it. Right? But we'll notice someone else. How come they can't change their personality? They got to give up this mentality. You know? Oh, them, it's like, it should happen like this. But me, oh no, you know, you have to give lifetimes. So this is because we value ourselves when we're self-centered. That is the value. So therefore we judge everything according to that. And everybody else is very obvious and straightforward because I'm not attached to it. Right? As long as it doesn't bother me, then it all changes. You know? And someone else, yeah, they gotta change, but it's my own family member. Well, you only gotta understand there's so many considerations of, you know, human life and society is very complicated. But the other guy, oh, he's gonna change. Yeah, you still like that? Can't he understand? So if we look at it, it doesn't look good. It doesn't look good. So basically the whole idea is we shouldn't get, you know, scared or anything. It's just that we should be able to face our own desires. This is a strong person. That person who can say, okay, this is like this, yes, I'm wrong. that is a strong person. That's a cultured person. The other one, know this, know that, and you don't understand, it just gets emotional. That is a weak person. So the idea is if we want to become Krishna conscious, we have to become conscious. Because unless we're conscious, we're not going to see what desires of what is our method for progression. We won't see it. If we're not conscious of how we eat, how are we going to become Krishna conscious when we eat? Right? There's this idea, some mystic thing, just we'll walk out into the courtyard, suddenly a lightning bolt will come down out of the sky and zap us, and then we're a human moment. Right? You know, or, you know, that's a little extreme, but at least when we wake up in the morning and jump out of bed, then we'll be a pure devotee. You know, something like that. I don't think many are thinking that, you know, someone touches with a magic wand on the head. And Prabhupada definitely got down on the thing of guru touching the disciple on the head and transferring. So definitely those ones we've given up, right? You know, they're great for, you know, like that. Hindus are for, you know, Peter Pan or something. But other than that, though. But there's how are you going to become Krishna conscious unless you become conscious? Because when you're conscious, then you put Krishna there. Does that make sense? Just like a yogi. He wants to meditate on Paramatma. So what's the first thing he puts into place? Meditation. Then, once meditation is in place, then he puts Krishna in that meditation. So the same ways, we become conscious of what we're doing, then we can tell whether Krishna is there or not. We're conscious of how I eat, how I sit, how I walk, how I talk, what are my values, what are my endeavors, what are my goals. We're conscious of what they actually are. Then we can look at it. Well, is Krishna connected? Or if Krishna is partially connected here, but in this aspect he's not, so then how to connect Krishna? Then you make a plan. That may be gradual, but you have a plan. But to just say it's a gradual process and there's no plan, that's not intelligent. It's only sentimental. Sounds great, but it's only sentimental. There's no intelligence being used. Other than, it's intelligent to say that to get the other person off the back. Like that. It's political. It's not, it's diplomatic. It's not intelligent as far as reason goes. Reasoning means, okay, now I do see there's an attachment here. Now what is the method to get myself out of that material attachment and replace it with attachment for Krishna? So that then may be a plan and may take, you know, days, months, years. But you're conscious of what's there. You know what's there. Then it's not a matter of, yes, that's the way it is. It's not a matter of, oh, why do they always say, why does Bhagavatam always speak, you know, so harshly or this or no. It is, that's the reality. But I am attached, so therefore, how to get out of it? Bhagavatam also says, so then let's put it into place and gradually by process, it'll all go. Right? Bhagavatam is getting down on the attachment. It's not criticizing the individual. Right? So then what's wrong? We should also be criticizing our own attachments if they're not Krishna. Right? They're able to do it in the Bhagavatam because they're conscious. We may find we're not able to do it because we're not conscious. So that's the point. Is well enough alone is good? Or is it a matter of, no, I want to get out of here. You know? And Prabhupada is so kind, he's given us the authorization to do it in one lifetime. So it means it's possible. With the order of Guru comes the ability. So to say, no, it's going to take me so many lifetimes. That's all right in humility, but the endeavor should be for one lifetime. And then the result means up to Krishna. But say, no, it'll take me many lifetimes, so there's no endeavor. What's the meaning of that? So the whole idea is that Parikshit Maharaj here is seeing that become attracted to the pastimes of the Lord means then you'll become attached to the pastimes of the Lord. Now, if you're attached to the pastimes of the Lord, then what will you do? You'll only hear and chant about the Lord's pastimes. So, therefore, he's encouraging Sukadev Goswami to speak. As he says, the mind, by nature, is not interested in so many things. But Krishna's childhood pastimes are so attractive. Therefore, the mind easily becomes attracted to them. And if they become attracted to Krishna, then one's not attracted to material energy. So now we must remember that this is on the 10th canto. So that means giving up attraction to the material energy has already been done in the first 9 cantos. So if one simply just tries to hear, and that's all, and not give up one's material desires, then that's not so successful. That's the sahajana. The impersonalist simply tries to give up material desires and doesn't try to attach himself to Krishna. Right? The impersonalist. So the path of bhakti is in the middle because it uses both. We analyze what are my attachments that are getting in the way of me being Krishna. And then seeing how to bring them in line with Krishna. Because if I'm attracted to it and it's in connection to Krishna, then I'll become attached to that and I'll be doing it for Krishna. And gradually the attachment to the external will go away. And then what will be left is just the attachment to making endeavor to serve Krishna. So that happens. At the same time, is then we are cultivating our relationship with Krishna by hearing and chanting about Krishna. Then that attraction to Krishna becomes manifest. So then this combination of becoming conscious of our material entanglement, freeing ourselves from that by connecting those things to Krishna, and doing things in connection with Krishna directly that are done with the authority of the devotees of the Lord, then develops that love for Krishna. That approach is the recommended process. Always remember Krishna, so hear about Krishna. Never forget Krishna. Research and figure out what it is that makes you forget and connect that to Krishna. Any questions or comments? Maharaj's question is that in dealing in the material world that there's that mood of attachment. And so we want to be the enjoyer, but actually it's Krishna is supposed to be the enjoyer. So what is the, you know, what is the operating principle that will speed up that transfer, so make the most quickest transition between I'm the enjoyer and Krishna is the enjoyer? It's the other one. The attachment comes to it, it's a pair, right? The dynamic duo, right? The other is envy. So, because we're envious of Krishna, because he's the enjoyer, we want to be the enjoyer. So if we give up that envy towards Krishna, that he's actually in control, that is what speeds it up. Because the point is if I identify, I'm servant of Krishna, then naturally if I'm servant, then I want to please. The degree of pleasure will situate you in the spiritual realm. I am servant of Krishna, and I enjoy that. That will situate you in Vaikuntha. When the surrender is more, then they'll get you into, you know, Dwarka, Ayodhya, Mathura. And when it's complete, if it's only Krishna's pleasure, then that situates you into Vrindavan. But the principle is, I am servant of Krishna, then that's the fundamental, that's the bridge. So then that also manifests as that non-enviousness, non-violence, this and that. Like everyone will say, yes, non-violence is good, non-being this and that, be kind. But all that is simply to get at the principle that we are envious of Krishna. That's the actual, what it's trying to do. So all these other, you know, pleasant platitudes, they're only expansions of that. So everything comes back to those two. Is, I am the servant of the Lord, so therefore I am bringing pleasure to the Lord. So then you have your social serving others, helping others, make others happy. Right? That's because it's supposed to be you're making Krishna happy. So then that may be hard for people to accept, but making my child happy, making my husband or wife happy, that's maybe an easier concept to grasp than making Krishna happy. You're not, or expanding that, yes, making the people happy, or making the dogs happy, or, you know, making somebody happy. Is that, can you say something? So then, mothers enjoying seeing the child happy, but there needs to be a way, point to connect Krishna in there. Otherwise, the mother is enjoying seeing the child happy, but the bottom line is she's enjoying. She's doing it because she enjoys it. Otherwise, why she's not doing it for someone else's child? It's a natural principle. Yeah, my Krishna is enjoying. Yeah, the principle is there. The natural principle of Krishna consciousness is inherent in the living entity. That's why Prabhupada says it's natural that the living entity is serving the Krishna. Yeah. So he's making specifically the point is that it's the nature of the living entities that we enjoy through others. So that's because the jiva is marginal. And so the marginal potency connects themselves to the servants of Krishna. And they actually find their happiness through serving the actual servants of Krishna. That's inherently the energy that they are. That means we are not internal potency. We are marginal potency. Internal potency directly serves Krishna. Marginal potency attaches itself to the internal potency and serves Krishna. So that's why the nature is there too, by seeing others, we are happy. That's our natural position. And that comes from Krishna, because Krishna is happy to see others happy. So that's where you're going to be inherent. But for us, it manifests through that point of being Jiva Tattva. That's why servant of the servant. Sometimes devotees think, I want to be the servant. But no, as a Jiva, you can't be the servant. We can be servant of the servant. Yes. That Krishna is happy we're doing it as long as we know why he's happy. Otherwise, the mother is happy seeing the child happy, but technically, why would Krishna be happy with that? On what platform? Why would Krishna be happy with the mother pleasing a child? You could all say, for what reason? Huh? Yes, it's a natural tendency. Yes, yes. Okay, he's just saying it's a reflection of the spiritual realm, because the residents of the spiritual realm, they have natural attraction to Krishna and like to serve Krishna and please. So that's reflected here by the Yashoda takes care of Krishna's child, so that for mothers here take care of the child. Is that what you mean? Then you can replace the desire of the mother to make a child happy with naturally just wanting to make Krishna. My Krishna. But it's also, but it's my Krishna as mother to show you. But why is he happy if he pleases the Lord? Yes, his child. So if you see that, it works. If you don't see that one point, it doesn't work. It's piety. So you have to take that proprietorship down to your feet. And also extend it out to others. My temple president, so he runs the show. My DC, my yacht. Yeah, but I'm not in control of it. The president's in control of it. That's where you can also test the brahmins. Because I'm happy that it's my temple, and therefore that my temple president tells me what to do, and Krishna is happy. Then you can also test to see if we're operating in a broad way. Otherwise, in the house, it's easy where there's some emotional content. But, you know, it's like, my shoes, how do I deal with them? My beauty property, my, you know, anything. But it's Krishna's system. That's the point. You respect the position, whether you respect the individual or not. So the main thing is to follow Krishna. If you can follow Krishna's instruction, then it is the next. That's what I was saying, is you test it. Is that somewhere there, the attachment may be good, one's thought about it, one's contemplated it, so one is able to apply it in that situation. So then the tendency is to think that across the board I've obtained that understanding or realization. But then applying it in another situation, sometimes we find it didn't work for us, because we didn't contemplate it. You know, the mother may be contemplating the attachment to the child, and it's actually, it's the natural, because it's our attachment to Krishna, that original attachments come from Krishna. So actually what I'm attached to Krishna in the form of this child, this kind of things. And then they work in there, but then attachment to the house maybe wasn't thought about. You know? So then, and there, then maybe we get emotionally involved, or in something else we get emotional. So then it's a matter of, okay, we become conscious of the child, mother-child relationship. Now we should become conscious of our other situations, our home, the other aspects, our money, our position, our this, and take the same principle and just become conscious. It's just like if you're trying to win a war, it's not necessarily won in one battle. So maybe you won that battle, and now you have to go to the next one, until you completed it. Then you have that realization across the board. You know? And then you look for other places where there's weaknesses or attachments. How do you differentiate detachment and impersonalism? Detachment means you're neutral. Impersonalism means you're attached. Right? So you have attraction and you have repulsion. Repulsion isn't actually detachment. Neutrality is detachment. Right? It's just like this. One person approaches another person, and they make basically a proposal to establish, you know, some kind of relationship. Okay, person A approaches person B. Person B flips out who they think they are, this, that, so many things, this, that. So is that actually detachment? You understand? Maybe two people. Okay. Boy goes up to the girl and says, hey. And then she just says, you know, get out of here, who are you, this, that. Tell him all her friends. So is that detachment or is that attachment? Right. If she didn't care, she wouldn't say anything. You know what I'm saying? So that's actually detachment. So what we know of detachment in this world is not actually detachment. So that's the point, is that detachment means you have no need to deal with it. Attachment is, I need to deal with it. Right? Repulsion is, I need to deal with that item, but not that particular one. You understand? Does that make sense? The girl wants to deal with the boys, but not that boy. So that's repulsion. It's not detachment. Detachment is, she doesn't need to deal with boys. There's no need to be gained from that field. That's detachment. Understand? So that's the platform on which the subconscious culture functions. If that's understood, then so many of your social interactions will function better. Because it's generally seen that if you're detached, then you must be against. Right? But actually, if you're detached, you have no need to deal with it. If there's no need to deal with it, then the whole concept just evaporates. Right? Because whether you push attachment or repulsion, it both nourishes the atmosphere of dealing with that item. Understand? Well, detachment is nothing. Right? If somebody says, make something, no means maybe. Right? But if nothing is said, that means no. Right? If somebody says a no to the other person, and they say no, that means maybe. Right? But if you send a note, no note comes back. No expressions, no repulsion. The other person goes on perfectly normal as if you had never even sent them a note. That means no. You understand? So we're very used to flipping between these two opposites. We're not used to actual detachment. That's why we consider the impersonalists detached, but they're attached. They're attached to being God. They can't enjoy, you know, individual things. They want to enjoy everything. They want to be God. So they're the biggest enjoyers. Which is just not on the gross, on the subtle plane. You can enjoy gross things, but you enjoy subtle. You can enjoy through attachment, no, enjoy through controlling, but controlling is for the purpose of attachment. So, actual neutrality, you're not trying to control, you're neutral. Right? The Brahmacharya is trying to control, live an hour here, live an hour there, that's attachment. But there's no need of women. That's detachment. Does that make some sense? So, it's a whole different concept. So that's the thing. There's karma, there's jnana, and then there's this completely separate thing, this bhakti. So that's the thing. Whatever we know as bhakti, whatever we know as attachment and repulsion, it's something else. It's only a reflection of the original. It's not the real thing. So when we're free from the material world, it means we're detached from it. Right? The Brahmacharya thinks, anytime he sees women, that's attachment, that's not detachment. So women come and go, and he doesn't care, that's detachment. Does that make sense? So detachment is not impersonal, because you have no need there, you have another need. So what we're thinking of is, I don't deal with it, I don't deal with my child. But because of our attachment, then we'll be rough. Does that make sense? So the whole point is if you're neutral, then what's the problem of dealing with it? Or what's the problem of not dealing with it? And why would you deal and not deal? Only if it's your duty. You have a duty to deal with it, right? The husband is neutral. He's detached. But because it's his duty to take care of the family members, then he takes care of them according to what is the nature and need of those living entities. The wife is a woman, so she's going to think and act like one. She's going to have needs like one. So therefore, from his neutral platform, then he knows what is the nature of the woman, and then how to please them. The child, they have their own nature, right? They need to be dealt with in a different way. So therefore, then they deal with them according to that, because that's the duty. That's detachment. That's actually detachment, because it's neutral. Right? But the other one is just detachment repulsion. That's what we've got in the past. Parents have felt they were detached from their kids, wouldn't deal with their kids. No, they were still very attached. And the flavor that came across was repulsion. Neutrality never gives the flavor of repulsion. So then, people, the kids feel neglected, the women feel neglected, everybody feels neglected. So that's not actually detachment. That's repulsion. Actual neutrality, what do you care? If you have to deal with it, you deal with it. You don't have to deal with it. Just like this. Okay, over in the big kitchen there, there's a big pot over there. Do you have any attachment for that pot? Any repulsion? No. Now let us say somebody asks you to go wash that pot. Do you have any problem? No. Now let us say you had some big problems with that pot before. It dropped on your foot every time you touched it. Now let us say they tell you to go wash that pot. You want to wash that pot? No. Okay. Or if you're really attached to it, no one else can wash the pot. Only you can wash the pot because no one knows how to care for that pot like you know how to care for it. Right? So you can actually see is people who are attached actually can't deal with an item or repulse as well as someone who's neutral. This is probably one of the major misunderstandings by Westerners, and here I mean devotees, about the Vedic culture. Because they figure detachment you won't be able to do it. No, people who are attached, they can't raise their family and take care and deal with their money and house as well as someone who's neutral. There's no way. Because attachment's not good enough. Because then attachment means why they're attached. That means why they're attached is the actual mode of all they're doing. So it's not because here's a child who's, is a soul who belongs to Krishna, and as Grihasthas we've given an opportunity for them to come into this world and take up devotional service No, we're attached to them because we wanted children. Right? Otherwise, there's so many children you can take care of. That's the only motive. It's just you want to raise children. Why not be your child? Right? Because there is that inherent thing. It has to have that feeling in mind. There's an attachment for that. Then there's the child. Now, it may be done in a very Krishna conscious way, but the motive is that need. Now, Krishna is so kind, we can engage that in his service. And from that, get purified and start to see, yes, this child is Krishna. But our original motive was our attraction and need to be a parent. And what interactions we have, we might even have some economic when we're older, or there's maybe so many reasons why. All the other ladies are happy with their kids, and I'm not, you know, I want to be happy like them. You know, no consideration for kids. You know what I'm saying? So maybe so many reasons what's behind it. So then how will that be on as high a standard as someone who's neutral? Okay, it's their duty as a grihastha then to have a child and raise them in Krishna conscious way. So that will work better than someone who's attached. But the attachment, generally if it's balanced, will be better than someone who's repulsed. Does that make sense? So the Vedic culture is the attachment is actually performing your duty. Right? That's the real where the attachment is supposed to be attached to that. And then from that, take it to that is what Krishna wants us to do. And then how is that piece of Krishna? So you're going from the pious to the transcendental. You know? But modern, you're going from the impious to the pious. And generally, pious is taking the spirit. Does that make sense? So, therefore, it's a whole different concept. If that's understood, basically, there are no social problems. There are no difficulties of interaction or what who needs what. Because then you inquire, what are they? It's not a matter of what I think a man or a woman or a child or a dog is. It's a matter of how God made them. So how did God make them? So what do they require? What don't they require? Like a dog doesn't require a sweater. A dog does not require a poodle cut. Right? They don't require that. But we think they do. But a dog doesn't. Therefore, in the Vedic culture, that's not given to dogs, because a dog actually couldn't care less. Right? So that's the whole point, is in the neutral state, we won't project onto it what our own needs. But we'll only deal with the individual according to what is the need of them and their inherent condition, nature, and their spirit. That makes sense. Yes.
Huh? One point for the detachment. There's a family in the Ram Vedic here, and when he got married, he will be fighting all the time. They never go alone. So then the husband once said, I don't want to talk to that lady anymore. So see that he didn't talk to that lady, to the wife. So that since 25 years passed, they never talk to each other. They had two children, they raised them up. Two nice children, they have. That's the problem. Don't you do that?
I couldn't hear. Yeah, we're only talking material attachment. Point is you can't have spiritual attachment unless you have brought your material attachments to neutrality. Yes. Yeah, but here, because the example is a mother and a child. He's attached to the child because he's a child, not because he's a great devotee. But that's not neutrality. That's aversion. Huh? You don't care. That's aversion. Yeah. Well, whatever. You can take either the spirit of what we said and try to understand it. It may sound like you don't care, but if you try to not get into the semantics of the English word and try to understand the point that's being made, then we're trying to point out the difference between material attachment and repulsion. And what is neutrality? Then ask that. Rather than attacking the point, say, how can you take it further? That's what Lord Chaitanya said. That's the tendency, but that was the point that I was cutting. And if you asked her, she understood that. So that was the point exactly that I was cutting. His parents in the past have been neglectful of the children in the name of detachment. That wasn't detachment, that was attachment. But it was in the form of repulsion. That wasn't neutrality. My point is devotees haven't acted in this neutral platform. Point is that if Krishna's, if you're attached to Krishna, and this is Krishna's temple, then it should be taken care of. And you're not attached to taking care of it because you are, you know, attached to the building. You are taking care of it because it's Krishna's. If it's Krishna's, then we deal with it. If it's not Krishna's, then you have no need to deal with it. The context of we're dealing with the there's two aspects. Always remember Krishna, never forget. So they both have to function together. And so since that was a tactical question on never forget, it goes that side. So we're sorry if it was overbalanced. Okay, last point.
So on one hand there's this statement from the Prabhupada. In the 60s, he said, all of those silent before the voice. And then on the other hand, you hear that actually we're not the only spirit that's fired the voice. So that's what we actually become the voice.
Okay, so the question is Prabhupada had mentioned that all his disciples are pure devotees. At the same time, he also said we were aspiring devotees. So when does one become a devotee? So there's two aspects. It's when you're dealing with others, they're pure devotees. When you're dealing with yourself, you're inspired by them. There's two different visions. Generally what happens is I'm the devotee, everyone else is inspired. We gotta flip it the other way. So pure devotee means is their motive is pure. So that's dealing with their conscious motive. Right? So that's they're conscious that they want to please Krishna, though they may be doing all kinds of crazy things that have nothing to do with Krishna consciousness, just by habit. They don't even know they're doing it. But their actual purpose in going out there and dealing with the books and dealing with each other, even though it may be very rough and uncultured, is that they really just want to please Krishna. And they think this is the best way to do it, but they don't know otherwise. So they're like that. They're just like the Vanaras. The monkey army of Lord Ramachandra. No, I said they refine. So they do things like monkeys, but their purpose is to please Ramachandra. So they get up there and they throw the boulders and this and that and jump around. They're monkeys. So that's what's seen by the Lord. So in that way you can see that they are pure devotees. Like that. But if they are conscious that they have other motives other than that, you know, yes, I have my house, I have this, the that, and I also have Krishna. That's not pure devotee. Right? But it's like there's only Krishna, everything I'm doing is for Krishna. But maybe they're only conscious of two or three things that they do for Krishna, the other things that they're doing they're not conscious. They're still counted as pure devotees. No need about it. Right? Then the manyam is only defined as pure devotee. There is no non-pure devotee, you might be a devotee. Only in the conditional level you can have pure and not pure. Like that. But at the same time, it's because the real definition of devotee is prema. Therefore, anything below prema is actually aspiring. But because Baba is the bud of it, you're actually in your spiritual form rendering service that is natural for your relationship, but it hasn't come to the platform of prema, it's not called aspiring. It's in between. So it's not prema, but it's not sadhana bhakti. Right? But until liberation, that's sadhana bhakti. So everyone's considered aspiring. Like that. But they still may be a pure devotee. But because our definition of pure devotee actually means pure, unalloyed devotee. So that's praying. Does that make some sense? So it's a technical to understand where one's situated, how to get over material endeavor. And to know, if you've made it to that point. Because otherwise it always has to be trying to become more and more aware of one's of Krishna, in one's defense. So until one gets the prema, that hasn't been complete. Does that make sense? Yes, that's technically the term. It's just like if somebody's cooking, they're cooking. But actually, until they finish cooking, you can't say they're cooking. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point. The pure devotees, so the mode is pure, they're moving forward. But you can't call them pure unalloyed devotees until they've made it, until they come to prema. Does that make some sense? Why the two? It's just to inspire. It's basically more to inspire the we're only sadhakas. That's to inspire the monkeys. Right? To come to a higher platform. And to say we're all pure devotees is to inspire the neophyte. Who otherwise easily becomes distracted. You tell them, hey, you got all these things you got to work out, then it's like they give up. But if no, we're devotees and we're doing this and we're doing it for Krishna, which is real. Like that. So they're only looking at that aspect of it, what they're conscious of. And so then they're inspired. They do the service, they become purified, that brings them to the Bhagavad platform, then when they can start to look at all the different things that are unconscious. Right? Means the neophyte deals with what's conscious. The monumentalist starts to deal with what's unconscious. Like taking exactly, well, take a block and then just take it back as far as you can until you hit envy and attachment. Right? And then when they see that, then, well, what is the real thing? What is the real attachment? What's the real, me becoming certain? Then they bring it all the way back this way. Then they basically cleared that path. Now it's a matter of practice. Then that becomes habit. What I'm saying? But for the neophyte, sometimes that's dangerous because they're so attached to their attachments. And when they deal with them, they become conscious of them, so then it brings it. They weren't conscious of it before. So when they're purified enough, they can become conscious of it and analyze it and pick it apart and throw it out. Does that make some sense? So for the mandala, you need to point out that there's differences. And for the neophyte, you point out more of the closeness. You know what I'm saying? If something's really close, then you'll work really hard to bridge the gap. Like that. But if you're really set in the thing and dedicated to it, then the more you see the gap, the more you make plans and try to work out each individual thing, how to actually get across it. Does that make sense? So, and the Dantarakshima Bhagavatam Ki, Guru Prabhupada Ki, Sambhikava.